This is the Thanks for Sharing podcast, the podcast where we explore all things recovery, healing, and relationship.
Remember to subscribe and download episodes in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, or on the Podbean app.
You can find more Thanks for Sharing at www.thanksforsharingpodcast.com or on Facebook at facebook.com/healingpaths. That's paths with an S. Hello and welcome to the Thanks for Sharing podcast. I'm John T.
And I'm Jackie P.
We are continuing our series with the 12 steps. We're on step 9. This is another one of those big, hairy, ugly steps that everyone's afraid of.
Yes.
I think that's fair to say.
Yeah. But also, sometimes are eager to get to until they get to it.
Yep.
And then they're like, oh, I don't want to do this step.
Right.
I wanted to do this step instead of step one.
This is the important thing, is that I make everybody feel that I'm sorry for what I've done, and that's all there is to this.
Right.
Yeah. So we're going to dive in to our big books and kind of go with this. I had a thought this morning as I was preparing for this episode. I've been reading through the 12 steps again on my own within my fellowship, and I'm appreciating each morning just having some thoughts having to do with whatever step it is that I'm on.
Uh-huh.
Just some thoughts to kind of carry through me throughout the day. So I'd encourage, if you've liked this series, to use it that way, to have it be something that whatever step you're on, get familiar with the words that are written about it, get familiar with the ideas there,
uh-huh.
and let that be something that you kind of marinate in. I found for me, as I work steps, worksheets and hammering things out are really important, but I feel a lot more of a deeper change when I'm kind of steeping myself in the ideas and the concepts.
Yeah, kind of that. Sometimes we get so focused on the detail, we don't see the beauty of what we're doing.
Yeah.
So marinating in it and kind of taking a step back and kind of seeing the forest instead of just being up close with the trees around you, the dirt around you.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that the ACA Big Books talks about with the ninth step. And we're going to start there. So this is a kind of they give an overview of the steps. And this is kind of long, but I think it's beautiful. So I'm going to read all of it.
Okay.
This is starting on page 237 of the Big Red Book. It says, "We liken the steps leading up to step 9 as a spiritual ropes course. The challenge course has involved risk, group support, and realization of inner courage. The ropes course began in step 1 when we detailed the effects of growing up in an unhealthy family. Our step 1 admission of the family dysfunction showed us the layout of the course that we would be encountering. In steps 2 and 3, we strapped on the safety belt of a higher power for the hurdles and challenges ahead. In step 4 and 5, we got a taste of trusting ourselves and others as we fell backward off the high porch into the arms of ACA members. These members had been through these steps and said we could make it. We felt like we were blindfolded. Many of us could not see the reasoning for the inventorying our past and telling someone our story. We could not see the other side, but we trusted our friends and God to catch us, and they did. In step 6 and 7, we sat around the group campfire listening to stories and relating. We realized we are human and we have defects of character like the next person. In step 8, we stand on the base of a 30-foot challenge pole, tilting our heads back to see the narrow but stable perch on top. With our eighth step list in hand, we begin to climb the sturdy pole toward freedom and God. As we ascend, we see into the upper branches of the trees around us. We stop climbing momentarily and check the safety harness, which represents step 3 and our decision to trust a higher power. We glance downward into the smiling faces of friends. We know what we are trying to do with our lives. We hear their encouraging words rising from below. We climb higher now above the treetops. Reaching the pole's perch, we carefully stand up, a little wobbly at first, but soon steady ourselves. As we stand there with our eight-step list, we are astonished by the perspective we had never imagined possible. We have finally gotten above it all with clarity. We can see our parents' dysfunction was not our fault. On the horizon, we see the preceding generations of our family lined up in single file, stretching back for miles. There must be 100 generations or more. At the front of the line, we see our parents as children with their parents. We recognize our grandparents, but visualizing our parents as vulnerable children is a new experience for us. We notice the generations of our family passing forward a bundle. They move the bundle along, handing it from one generation to the next. We watch as the bundle moves closer to our grandparents and parents. The bundle is heavy and gripped tightly as one generation hands it off to the next. The bundle is held at the stomach level as it is passed forward. We concentrate on the bundle and begin to recognize it. Our eyesight has been improved by our step work. We can see more clearly. We see our grandparents kneel and give the bundle to our parents. Our parents receive the bundle as children. We understand what they have taken possession of. It is shame, abandonment, and loss from the ages. We think about what we have seen. We realize we don't have to take possession of the bundle. It's not ours. We're free. We look behind us, over our shoulder, to a clear horizon. There are no families there yet. We realize we have a chance to interrupt the passing on of family dysfunction. We see no blame for anyone for what we are about to do in step 9. We are not blaming our parents or ourselves. We are willing to make amends to those we have harmed, so that we can be free to serve God and society. During the amends process, we protect ourselves and our inner child, but we will not shrink from this important step. We feel as if we are closer to God, and we want to live and let live. We are learning to reparent ourselves with love and gentleness. The sky is clear, and we step off into step 9.
Mm. Powerful.
Yeah, I love that image because, particularly the bundle being passed from generation to generation, I think that's what step 9 is, mm-hmm. is not just understanding the bundle, but it's interrupting the flow.
Mm-hmm.
It's starting to clean up our own mess instead of just passing it along to the people
right.
around us.
Yeah. It reminds me of when I went to a professionals weekend down in Tennessee at the ranch, and we did something very similar to what they described there. There was an old like rock wall. I think they told us it was like pre-Civil War built. And, you know, there was a tiny stream kind of behind it, nothing that would need a dam or anything, but and they had us climb up you know, several different ladders that you had to climb up to get to the very top ridge. And first of all, I don't really like climbing ladders, especially mm-hmm. the extension ladders that kind of sway. Oh. But, you know, we were harnessed in, and, you know, so you get up to the very tip top. I think they said it was like 70 feet up.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had to, like, shimmy across the wall. And then you got over to where Bobby was, who was the staff who was helping us with it. And then you had to turn around, and it was like, I don't like the ledge that you're shimmying across isn't even the length of your foot, right? Mm-hmm. Or the width of your foot. So you're shimmying across, and then you get over to Bobby and he's like, okay, turn around. And you're just like, no, I'm good. Like,
there's not room to turn around.
He's like, well, you got to jump forward. No, I don't really want to jump forward. Like, well, do you want to jump backward? No, not really. You know, and he takes some time just in his calm, soothing voice to kind of talk to you about what's going on in your body and get you in tune with your body. You know, I remember kind of snapping at him when he was like, he was like, what are you feeling in your body? And I was like, panic. And he was like, okay, so you feel fear. And I was like, no, I said panic. It's sheer panic. Like, don't minimize it to fear. Anyway, and so he was just, you know, kind of getting me into my body, and I did turn around, you know, and they had talked to us about, because we were harnessed in, and they said, you know, what we'd like you to do is when you jump, our kind of our human instinct is to hold on to something so that we have a feeling of some type of control. And they were telling us, like, that's really an illusion. Like, you holding your harness is just making you think you're in control, but
yeah.
It's not any good. So they were like, what we want you to do is like hands out, feet out, jump, you know? And I was just like, oh my gosh, you know,
I need my illusion.
Right. And we, you know, they gave us a minute to just kind of talk to ourselves and calm ourselves. And then when you were ready, you just said ready, and you jumped, you know, and I was able to do that. Like, and in that moment, like, I'm like, some days I don't know if I would have been able to do it. Like,
yeah.
That day I was. Probably 2 months before that, I don't think I could have. Or anyway, but it's a similar feeling often that I have when I'm making amends or having to have a difficult conversation, that those same feelings of kind of climbing up the extension ladders that are swaying, shimmying over, and then purposefully jumping.
Mm-hmm.
I realize I experience that sensation a lot in my life.
Yeah.
And the need for it. But how good it also feels when you're done.
Yeah.
And you're like, I did that.
I think step 9 is really kind of cresting the hill. And it's not that it's easy after, but it's a very different kind of work.
Yeah.
Afterward.
Yeah.
And there is, you know, I think still to this day, step 9 is the scariest step for me whenever I have to work that or practice that.
Yeah.
It's the one I like the least.
It's one of those, it reminds me, like, because it would be my tendency to be like, yeah, I'll make that amends as it comes up in conversation.
Yeah.
And it never does. Like, it's literally taking this leap and saying, I need to talk to you about something.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, because it's not just this doorway opens and you kind of slide in.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you've made an amends. It's like this purposeful jump into the amends.
Yeah.
I wanted to read, following up in the ACA, it starts on page 239, right where we left off. It talks about moving forward with prudence and courage. And it says this. Step 9 is about mending relationships with others and ourselves. The step also involves cleaning up the wreckage of our past and being willing to release resentments. In some cases, an amends will help restore a relationship. In other cases, an amends will bring closure to a past relationship or association. Then jumping a paragraph, the emotional and spiritual rewards for making our amends are awesome. Many such benefits are intangible, but they assure us that we are finally making greater progress in our lives. We are truly involved in real behaviors that are bringing change into our lives. In step 9, we are bringing together the pieces of our spiritual blueprint created by the preceding steps. We are building our new home. We are turning on switches and opening windows installed by the hands of the Spirit of the universe. There is still work to be done, but we are on our way. We have our foundation in place. And then jumping to page 240, the second paragraph down, it says, with sincerity and effort, we begin to no longer feel ashamed of our past. We gradually release our carried guilt and our carried shame. We feel free. With such freedom, our behavior changes for the better. We know it's okay to trust ourselves. We realize that shame and fear of abandonment drove our harmful behavior. With help, we can stop reenacting what was done to us. We want all of our freedom. We want to be free of food addiction, sex addiction, gambling addiction, drug addiction, and compulsive spending. We want to sleep well, enjoy our jobs, and contribute to the betterment of the world. We are reclaiming our personal power and taking our place in the world as individuals with something to offer. We have greater choice in our lives. We desire wisdom and discernment. We realize that the ACA way of life is comprehensive, practical, and spiritual. The program is a way of life that works in all areas of our lives. With it, we can face career choices, relationship challenges, and questions of God, in addition to facing our past and recovering from abuse and neglect.
That sounds like the ACA version of the 9th step promises, which are the really famous ones from AA, which state we'll intuitively do things that used to baffle us.
Uh-huh.
And now, of course, that I want to recall this, I can't remember the specifics of it, but just kind of that day-to-day change that comes in life.
Yeah.
Well,
every time I read that, I think, I want to live in a world where that's what people do.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think here it's important to pay attention to one of the avenues of bypass that can come up in the amends process. And I think the RCA, Recovering Couples Anonymous book, hits on this pretty well. This is on page 33. It says, we caution you not to confuse apologies with amends. Sometimes apologies are called for, but apologies are not amends. Amends are made by repairing damage when possible and then acting differently. For example, we can apologize 10 times for being late to a meeting, but that does not amend the issue. Being on time and changing our behavior becomes our amends. Mm. I have worked with a lot of people over the years who, especially when there's a big crisis or there's a big mess, will say, well, don't you think I should go make amends for that? And I'll usually say to them, no, we're not doing amends right now. You have some wreckage to understand.
Because that approach to an amends is really about making them feel better.
Yeah.
And it's not really about amending anything.
Yeah.
Making anything different. It's just about, I feel awful. I want to rush in, say sorry, so that I can walk away and feel better.
It's not a coat of paint. It's a real structural change that we're doing in the amends process.
Yeah. In Essanon, they say this on page 99. We are actively repenting, which means turning around from our old ways toward new, considerate attitudes and actions. We need not wallow in excessive guilt or over-responsibility. Those feelings do not promote constructive action. We need to be honest and sincere, that is all. We have found it much harder to go to an enemy than a friend. It may be that such a person has done us more harm than we've done him or her. It is very difficult to lay our faults before someone who we fear will not receive us well. Nevertheless, we go in a forgiving spirit and admit our ill feeling with humility. We never criticize such a person or tell him or her what to do. We stick to our own faults in a calm manner. The outcome may be positive. The other person may even admit his or her fault. Yet it doesn't matter if we are not warmly received. We have taken the responsibility to do our part, and in that we receive our satisfaction and personal growth, or spiritual growth. And then it says this, some wrongs can never be fully made right. But if we have the right heart, we needn't worry. In some cases, we cannot see people directly, so we send a letter. We try not to delay, for there is a long period of rebuilding ahead. We must be initiators. People need more from us than a simple, I'm sorry. We also need to change our behavior and attitudes.
I think that really highlights not just some of the hard work, but some of the, I think, really beautiful changes that come in working step nine, is that we really let go of outcomes in that, like your story of jumping off that wall. You probably had some reasonable assurance that you weren't going to die.
Right.
But it was still a big...
It was panicky.
Yeah. Yeah. It was still a big act of trust and something that you had to face. And I think in step nine, that's really what we're doing.
Yeah.
We're stepping off into something that's completely unknown for us, mm-hmm. and we're letting go of all outcomes.
Yeah. Well, I would imagine anybody who has done anything similar to that, bungee jumping or any of that, right? It's interesting because the brain is like, in its survival mode, is like, we don't do this. This mm-hmm. is not a safe thing for a person to do, right? So the brain's kind of like, no, no, no. And you've got to hear that and move past that in mm-hmm. order to get your body to follow something that seems completely irrational.
Mm-hmm. And that's old rules that we're living on, is the brain is saying, no, 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 that's not mm-hmm. safe. And this is really part of creating right. your recovery world.
Yeah. In which I was talking to a client today in which he was saying, I still struggle, like it making sense in my brain that vulnerability is okay and even helpful.
Mm-hmm.
But he's like, there's a lot of me that's still just like, you shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
That's dangerous. People can use that against you.
Yeah. You know. Is it, was it Dr. Bob in the AA stories that had that story of his all day amends marathon?
I think it was.
So they tell the story of, Dr. Bob had fallen off the wagon again, as I understand, he really was on and off for a long time. Mm-hmm. And he had realized he had not faced step nine. There were things left undone and amends left unmade. And he was sick of the chaos and sick of the cycle. So he determined one day he was going to start on his amends list, and he was going to go and make amends
That's
to
right.
everyone that he had harmed. And it said that he came back, it was like more than 12 hours later, uh-huh. completely exhausted, completely drained, but had no more desire to drink
to
afterward.
Yeah.
And I think step nine is a real, it's a step that I think it does us a lot of service to work it carefully.
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually a place where, as I see people struggle with sobriety or struggle maintaining sobriety, the concepts and the promises of step nine are not clicking for them yet.
Yeah.
I'm going to look at Sex Addicts Anonymous now, the green book. This is on page 49. And this is talking about when and how to make amends. Because again, like I said, I'll run into people or I'll work with people who have made mistakes and they really want to patch it up, aka they want to make themselves feel better. So this talks about how we get a sense of how we're supposed to do this. It says, we need to exercise good judgment here. We should seek the counsel of our sponsor and other members who have experience working this step. Rather than rushing into premature amends, we need to take time to get clear about exactly what we are making amends for and what harm we think we caused in each situation. We also take time to clarify our emotions before we proceed. An attitude of humility and a sincere regret for the harms we have done will carry us far. For each amends, we also decide whether it is appropriate to make contact with that person, how much to reveal to that person, and whether we put ourselves at risk when we make amends. Step 9 is not meant to be a place where you flog yourself or put yourself in harmful positions,
right.
But it is a place where you do need to be brave, mm-hmm. And step into the unknown.
Yeah, that's a good reminder. You've got a general path through the 12 steps, but did you want to do 12 and 12 before?
Let's look at the 12 and 12, and then we can close with the steps and traditions. So this is on page 83, and this highlights the different kinds of amends. And I'll have to remember, and you correct me if I'm wrong, when we had Carver come do Back to Basics, there's 4 different kinds of amends.
Right.
So this kind of hits on that, and then we'll go back and list them. There will be those whom we can make only partial restitution, lest complete disclosures do them or others more harm than good. There will be other cases where action ought to be deferred, and still others in which, by the very nature of the situation, we shall never be able to make direct personal contact at all. Most of us began making certain kinds of direct amends from the day we joined Alcoholics Anonymous. The moment we tell our families that we are really going to try the program, the process has begun. I like that with how big step 9 is. It can feel like you'll never get momentum.
Uh-huh.
But recognizing that amends process, that cleaning up the wreckage and living differently, that started the day you committed to getting sober.
Right.
So when we talk about the different kind of amends, and help me out with the list here. So there's direct amends, that's face-to-face.
Mm-hmm.
This is what happened, taking responsibility.
Right.
There's letters that are never sent.
Yes.
Where we write a letter, we express our amends, and then we never send it. Some people even have a ceremony where they'll burn those letters.
Yeah.
Or
I've heard some who will say, you know, that they even go through the action of putting it in a letter, putting a stamp on it with no return address,
mm-hmm.
right? Or not,
mm-hmm.
not any deliverable address, and they just put it in the mailbox.
Uh-huh.
Right? Who knows what the U.S. Postal Service does with those? I'm sure
it's
going to
be going to be a book in 20 years.
Right. The letters that were never sent. But you know, sometimes they want to go through that motion of actually putting it
mm-hmm.
in the mailbox as though I have
I'm
given
letting
that.
It go.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's the living amends.
Yes.
Which is where.
I mean, I just think if that is my life is different after I make the amends. Right. And
mm-hmm.
and going forward, how I live reflects the amends that I make.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you could do amends without living amends being a part of that.
Yeah.
And really, I mean, I think I tell clients a lot of times, you can write a letter, you can say the words, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have a lot left to what your word means.
Yeah.
So you've kind of used all that up. And so without action behind it, which is the living amends, this really means nothing.
Yeah. And so I think in that way, living amends kind of underpins all of them.
Yes.
I am thinking of a situation where I don't think I came to my senses in time to make things right with the individual that I hurt. There was a boy, as I was growing up, they moved into our neighborhood when he was probably 8 and I was 8. He was a couple weeks older than me. And when they moved in, everything was normal and everything was fine. He had a degenerative brain disease that
mm-hmm.
his family knew about. And that's one of the reasons why they'd moved to our neighborhood, because it was a lot closer to a children's
mm-hmm.
hospital where he could get treatment. So as time went on, like, I just didn't understand him as much. I didn't have a context for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel like I was ever outright hostile towards him, but
mm-hmm.
I know I wasn't kind.
Mm.
I know that I didn't get it. I remember going on a camp out with him and scouts, and we rode our bikes across, there's an island here in Utah called Antelope Island in the middle of the Great Salt Lake, and there's a causeway. We rode our bikes across the causeway into the campground, and I remember riding with him, and it worked because I was slow and he was slow. So we were kind of talking, and I said, hey, do you want to share a tent tonight? And he's like, yeah, that would be great. He asked his dad. His dad said, that's fine. So we get to the island and we're unloading the truck. And I kept saying, like, come and help me.
Mm.
Like, if you're going to sleep in a tent with me, like, you need to help
mm-hmm.
me set this up. And he just kind of stood there. I understand now, like, I think at that point he couldn't make his body work the way that he needed to. And I remember getting so frustrated with him. And I remember by the end of the camp out just feeling so done. And so, like, I'm never going to try with him again. As time went on, it ended up in junior high. He was in a wheelchair, couldn't talk, couldn't see. At the end of his life, he was on a respirator and things like that. I remember watching another boy in the neighborhood who was very soft and very compassionate with him. And they had a good friendship because of that. I carried around for probably 20 years immense guilt at how I had treated him. And I didn't even realize I carried this around until I was getting trained for EMDR.
Oh, yeah.
And I picked a memory that I thought was pretty benign, and it connected to all of this. And I had to confront the shame that was there. And I, one of the things that helped me to kind of come out of some of that shame and to be able to move on is to recognize that I did start living really differently because of how I felt. That I took that as a sign, not that I took that as a sign that something was wrong with me, not that something was wrong with him.
Yeah.
And that I needed to focus on that. And that's been a really important part, I think, of my life from that point forward, is not to assume why people act the way that they act, and to default to patience rather than criticism. And I've talked to his mom, but I'll never be able to make it up to him directly. So early in the days of AA, they talked a lot about direct amends was kind of the least used amends. There was a lot of living amends, or there was amends in kind, which is the fourth kind, where we'll give what we took in order to balance the books.
Well, and I think that's a great story, because you could easily minimize and be like, hey, I was a kid. I didn't understand. But you would have missed kind of the gem that you found as you were able to open up that guilt and let yourself feel that and go through that amends process. It led you to living differently and having wisdom that you didn't have before you were able to really open that up and let yourself see what was there.
Yeah.
That had you minimized it or dismissed it and tried to ease your conscience, you wouldn't have gotten the wisdom.
And as you say that, I'm really, really grateful that that seemingly small thing was something that I went back and looked at.
Yeah.
And I think that's what step 4 and 8 really call us to do, is to take a complete inventory, not judging what's big or small or what's important or not important.
Yeah.
And just looking at all of it.
I think this week with different clients, I think I found myself 3 or 4 times saying in different sessions, look, I don't want to make a big deal out of something that isn't a big deal. But can we explore this and see what it really is? And I think sometimes therapists get a rap for, you know, somebody comes in and they think their problem's 10% and they leave the session thinking it's 110%, right? Sometimes therapists get a bad rap for that. And I don't think it's that we're trying to blow things out of proportion. But again, it's one of those where we're excavating for some wisdom. We're mining for the precious stones that are there in that event, because we see that those are gifts to people, not because we're trying to, you know, make something big that really isn't, or make more money out of the clients or something like that.
Yeah. But, and I think there's a reason you should Google the 9th step promises. I think there's a reason why those promises are embedded in step 9, because I think the ground is just so full of those precious stones.
Yeah, and so just briefly, like amends in kind, let's give examples. I know we had a client once where, as part of his amends process, he was donating to, I think it was like women's shelters, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so, I mean, that's something that you could do in kind. Like, I'll never be able to really make up for my behavior, but I will financially contribute to a cause that is helping people.
I have an uncle, he's not my biological uncle, he and my aunt divorced probably 10 years ago, and I don't feel like I knew him very well. He was, you know, that crazy uncle that my cousins could talk into drinking a bottle of Tabasco sauce for 50 cents, because they just said 50 and he thought it was bucks, so he downed it, and so he was my crazy uncle, and I always remember, like, I liked spending time with him, but mm-hmm. I didn't know him very well. When they divorced, it really surprised me. And since they divorced, I got a little bit closer to her, but at my grandparents' funerals, he showed up to both of those. And I found out then that he had entered AA soon after they had divorced. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that probably had something to do with the divorce. And I remember talking to him and saying, you know, we haven't had a whole family reunion in a long time, and I miss that. And I especially miss, like, I remember that you were really fun, and I always laughed a lot when I was around you. And he was like, I have an email address, and I know that you have it. And so we've been in a little bit of contact over the years. And he has, I think he just has one biological child, my cousin. But it was soon after entering AA, he also entered the Big Brothers program. And he's had a little brother. I think he's had the same little brother for probably 15 years or more now. And I think that's some of his amends in kind.
Yeah.
You know, knowing what I know about living in active addiction, I don't think that attuned parenting comes out of that. And I don't know what his relationship is like with my cousin, but I would imagine that that's part of his amends, is going back and being present with a child and making a difference for a child.
Because his son or daughter can't be 10 again or something like that.
Yeah, he probably lost a lot of opportunities.
Yeah. So that would be amends in kind. Okay, so let's start with the general path through the 12 steps, and then we'll read what it says in the 12 principles.
Okay. So this is on page 284, and I thought this was a good way to conceptualize what step 9 is about on an ongoing basis. Mm-hmm. It says, having difficult conversations with people we harmed expands our awareness and helps us see the story we told ourselves in relation to them may not be true or accurate. When we let someone else tell us their story about what we did and what effect it had on them, and when we really listen to what they say, we internally experience what they experience. And this is something that Pat Carnes pointed out at the last CSAT symposium I was at, that the empathy centers of addicts' brains are one of the brain centers to take a hit or to atrophy in addiction. So this process of listening to somebody else's story and trying to feel what they feel, like, that's exercising a part of the brain you need back. We may also begin to rewrite our own internal story of what happened. All of this changes our brain in many positive ways. As we put ourselves in a position of what it was like to be on the receiving end of our actions, we grow our mirror neuron system. This helps our brain relearn empathy and compassion. It improves our ability to solve problems. It also makes us more able to have empathy for ourselves. I remember when I was a new therapist here, and I was in supervision with Jackie, often you would bring up, you need to have the what it's like to be in a what it's like to be in a relationship with you conversation with your client, and you need to encourage them to have that conversation with other people.
Yeah,
what is it like to be in a relationship with me? And I think that that's part of the long term gate that step 9 starts to open, as we start to get accustomed to those very difficult but very valuable conversations.
Yeah, so principle 9 is responsiveness, and so it says this starting on page 179. As our recovery deepens, responsibility grows into responsiveness. Spiritual intelligence unfolds into spiritual integrity. Making amends expands into mending the world. Step 9 taught us to apologize and make amends whenever we create harm. As we live Principle 9, we move beyond the personal and the situational. We begin asking ourselves a larger question: how can I help make things better? As we go through our day, this question opens into innumerable others. How can I help my employer succeed? How can I deepen my relationship with my partner? How can I make my community safer? How can I be a better spouse, employee, volunteer, church member, parent, sibling, child, in-law, neighbor, community member, citizen, and steward of the planet? What is the next right thing I need to do? In Living Principle 9, we become acutely aware that every one of our actions and decisions has an effect on other people and the world. We begin to bring consciousness and discernment to everything we do. Our focus changes from me to we. Our inner observer now assumes a larger role. In addition to monitoring our brain and evaluating each situation, it asks, how can I best be of service? It also prompts us to address difficulties and conflicts sooner rather than later. We deal with things rather than let them languish or fester. In addition, we become more proactive. We think through the likely consequences of each potential course of action. Not only its immediate consequences, but what may happen in a week, a month, a year, and 10 years. We respond to the future by making wise choices in the present. Day by day, we build integrity. A key aspect of this integrity is a nimbleness of spirit. One moment, we may need to speak up. The next moment, we may need to be silent and listen. Responsiveness may prompt us to follow a rule in the morning, enforce a rule in the afternoon, and break a rule for an honorable reason in the evening. So again, not getting so fixed into anything, but in each situation, you know, checking in with ourselves, it kind of what's required of me,
mm-hmm.
what can I do, what can I not do, and then making a choice in the present that has that impact on whatever future we want to create.
It reminds me of something that the AA Big Book talks about, is that when we get fixated on some beef that somebody has with us, mm-hmm. if we'll really inspect that, we'll realize that we stepped on their toes first.
Yes.
So as I listen to that about responsiveness, often when I'm working with trauma clients and we're looking at repeating cycles, it eventually gets to this point where they're no longer surprised that this is their life. And that's been mm-hmm. so much of their suffering before, is it's like, I can't believe this is happening. Mm-hmm. I can't believe this is happening. And as we look at their story, it's like, I don't know why you would think anything else would happen.
Right.
Like, let's stop being surprised at this, because these people or these situations are fixed.
Uh-huh.
In your life. And when they get past that, like, this doesn't surprise me anymore. It still hurts.
Right.
It makes me sad. I don't want it to be this way, but it doesn't surprise me anymore.
Yeah.
Their ability to respond really opens up.
Yeah, I've seen that with clients as they come to that conclusion and say, I wasn't ever going to be anything other than this addict,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, and that's understanding their story and kind of understanding what they didn't understand at younger ages. And so they're just like, this was going to be my path.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to be going forward here. Like,
yeah.
I can do it differently now because I have different awareness. I have different insight. But all of the past brought me to here.
Well, and I think that's part of working this amends process, and especially face-to-face when you can, is reactions from other people stop surprising you.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when it relates to your own behavior. And I think that's part of the denial that we live in addiction, is that what I'm doing doesn't hurt anybody else or affect anybody else.
Yeah.
And as we get used to the fact that what we put out there gets on other people and it comes back to us, we can be much more choosy about what we put out there and why we put it out there.
Yeah. I think you get to this place in knowing yourself in which you don't usually get feedback that surprises you anymore.
Yeah.
Like, you may not always like the feedback, or you're like, dang it, I fell back into that.
Mm-hmm.
But you have enough of a knowing of the self that you're not too surprised,
yeah.
you know? And so if you got too big and took somebody's space and hurt their feelings and they give you that feedback, you're like, yeah, I have a tendency to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I can make amends. This isn't new information for me. It's helpful information for me, but it's not, the more we know ourselves, the less we're surprised
yeah.
about ourselves, I think.
Yeah. I think that's a pretty good place to pause on step 9. So we'll be back next week with step 10.
Yeah. Remember, your story matters. Remember, there is something meaningful in every chapter. Don't wait to share your story until it's finished.
You can share your story with us on our Facebook page, Healing Paths, Inc., or on our website, www.thanksforsharingpodcast.com.
This podcast is solely for the purpose of information and entertainment and does not constitute therapy, nor should it replace competent professional help.
At the end of another episode, we want to remind you that nobody has time for perfection. We are pursuing progress.
And remember the prayer of the perfectionist. Help me remember I can't do it all. Help me to take things one step at a time, and that the only step I need to focus on is the next right step for me.
Help me to remember that life is a journey. Help me to be able to separate all that I am learning from all that I have to do. Help me to remember that I am not alone, that I can ask for help. Help me to strive for frequent awakenings, not mastery. I am enough. Amen.